You know, the problem is they don't pay true values. I do appreciate the support. We fought it hard. We fought a good fight, and nothing changed as usual. But here we are.
Well, they understood true value. They gave me gift certificates to the hardware store. It was great. Mike Tomlin was
mulch for the backyard. It worked out. That was my raise.
Hey, you know,
5 bags of mulch.
We do what we can. Mike Tomlin was here last. Was it Thursday? I guess it was Thursday, right? Yeah, for Pro Day. He said, he looked over, he said, this is a freak show. what kind of value do you think? He and Joe Judge were the two head coaches that were there along with 29 scouts. You know, I know it's a convenient trip. So what kind of value can coaches get out of going to somebody's Pro Day?
I think this is just my two cents. I think there are a lot of cumulative value add types of things, but by and large, the biggest value that they're going to get is going to be really sitting down and talking to the player.
I agree.
Mike Tomlin is a master of this. He's a great schmoozer. He loves going around talking to guys, coming up with a great, you know, witty quote like he did then. I remember what did he say about Chase Young right before the game against Washington this year? You got to lose a lot of games to get a guy that looks like you, you know, things like that. He's known for that, but that's kind of his general assessment. He tends to be, you know, pretty forward with the high level athletes, and Penn State's shown in the last couple of years they've got dudes. I mean, these are guys that could really get out in the field and move. Tomlin will coach them to what they need to do. He's just got to be able to get some of them in the door. I wouldn't be surprised if he's looking that way again this year. There are definitely a couple players there the Steelers could use. And I think for him, getting up close and personal and finding out who they are as young men, finding out what their personalities are like, how they might fit into the team. I think he builds based on that concept, and he's done a good job of it, bringing in team guys that fit in with the culture that they have. He's known for that. He's got his work cut out for him this year for sure. But they're you know, racking up the frequent flyer miles. They're at a lot of pro days, and this is a very different year for them in that regard. So if nothing else, you hope that what they're getting out of it is what they've already seen on film, and this is really more the opportunity to chat them up a little bit and see who they are.
And, you know, there's no combine this year, so that's why pro days have a greater emphasis than ever before. There's also been a couple of guys that, you know, I think when we talked last week, Stevie Nelson was gone, but they've actually had people come back that I didn't expect. What's your thought on that?
Kind of reminds me of before the 2010 season. They missed the playoffs, had kind of a down year. I think they were 9-7, but came on big at the end. They had a lot of injuries that year. But the kind of the joke that we made at the time with the publication I was working for was they were getting the band back together. And that was they brought back Antoine Randall L. Of course, I'm not going to remember any others off the top of my head. There were a few of them in which it was like, we want to bring back the culture that we know won 2 Super Bowls. We want to bring back guys that we're familiar with that do the things that we need them to do because we have to get back to basics here. It feels a lot like that to me. You had an embarrassing running game last season in Pittsburgh, short yardage in particular.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to address the interior of their offensive line early in this draft. I wouldn't be surprised if they had addressed players that will directly impact their running game. Whether that is what's in vogue in the NFL, whether that's what you know, the analytics will suggest is the better way to, the more efficient way to build your offense. And they're going to want to run the football. And right now they don't have anybody to run the football. So if they're going to do anything, bringing back the players that might have contributed to that in the past, and really looking at B.J. Finney, who as of now might be their starting center, I think it's largely the idea that they want to do the things that have made them a more balanced team, at the very least in the past. Considering how poor their tight ends were, considering how poor their running backs were last season, they had to throw the ball as often as they did. But if you would have told me last year at this time Ben Roethlisberger is going to throw 608 times in 15 games, I would have said that this team's probably going to struggle. And I think we saw that pretty clearly with the way that Ben broke down, the amount of three and outs that they had. Their atrocious level of yards per carry, they were awful. I mean, they're going to need to do things now to impact that. And you can't get you know, you can't get a high impact guy in the fourth round. It just doesn't happen that way. If you want to run the football, they're going to have to invest in it early in this draft, and I don't think they're necessarily done in free agency either. So putting all those things together, I really think mostly this team is going to want to send the message that there's a way that, that the Steelers traditionally want to play football, and we're going to find that this season. If that's not you, we're going to find somebody else. But we need guys to come in here to be able to move other guys off the ball and win the line of scrimmage, and with that, try to get 4.5 yards, 5 yards of carry.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do that alone. It's a month to go now. So now the free agency part pretty much has fallen into place. So have the priorities for the team. Oh, by the way, the NFL just officially announced a 17-game regular season. So let's get to that. We're going to reduce the preseason to 3 games. We're going to play 17. This is not something that was unexpected, but it just broke now. So since it did, just your thoughts on going to 17.
Yeah, it's verbatim exactly what we expected, and we've expected for quite some time, even pre-CBA signing last year. I think that you could see the owners pushing for 18 games with the idea that they can compromise down to 17. And with that, they're going to cut at least one preseason game. So with that, you have the unbalanced schedule, which is unique for the NFL. And I would say from kind of a smart but pessimistic perspective, it's like, well, Mike Tomlin doesn't have the 8-8 mark to aim for with this team. It's either going to be a winning season or a losing season. He's putting that record on the line, and I'm not sure if it isn't a losing season this year. But the extra game is against Seattle. Seattle's a pretty good team. They have a pretty tough schedule as it is. I don't know if this is the best year for the Steelers in particular to have 17 games, but who knows? I mean, it could go either way. It's unique. It's interesting in that sense. I find covering a network the way that I do across the entire league, there are a lot of fan bases that kind of tune out when the team isn't very good about the middle of the season. So
I agree with that.
I wonder if it'll get a little – it'll feel like a little bit longer than 1 week. I'm not sure it had the impact – that the playoffs had the impact last year that they really wanted either. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, you sometimes have to kind of push something until it squeals, and maybe the oversaturation of the NFL, that theory and what, you know, a lot of fans have talked about over the years, I wonder if they're not really trying to test that to see – if this isn't better, but we knew they were going to add a game at least at some point. And in one line of thinking, I think it's a lot of fun early on in the season, you know, getting the feeling that there's going to be a lot more football played. But by the end, you might kind of get into the sense that, you know, maybe this is a little too much. But the combination of 17 games this year and the new addition of an extra team for the playoffs for each conference last year, it does suggest that they're widening the ability to put more teams into the postseason, to give more teams a chance within that last week. Because you're looking at legitimately 7-9 teams can make the playoffs, and that wouldn't be all that much of a surprise. So, I mean, thank you, NFC East. But it really, it's the idea that a team can be more competitive for a longer period of time. The Steelers, I think, are a good example of that, just in the fact that most of their 8-8 seasons, I believe, would have resulted in playoffs if there was an additional seed in there. And a couple of those teams were playing really well up until the end after pretty bad starts. So maybe that makes it more fun. You know, maybe I don't want to say de-emphasizes the regular season, but it does give a legitimate chance to a team that's playing well at the end of the year. If they're able to get in there and grab that final seed, they can make some noise against probably what should be a pretty good 2 seed. But in the NFL, as you know, I don't think the difference in a conference between 2 and 7 is really all that great. It really comes down to how they're playing at the end of the year. And yes, I think that makes for a fun playoff-like scenario.
It's interesting what you talked about the playoffs. They expanded by 1 game in each conference this year. So, in other words, only one team had a bye. And while interesting, ratings-wise, I don't think it had the home run I think they thought it was going to be.
No, I think there was a level of fatigue that ended last season. Not in the sense that...
Well,
people didn't want football, but it was just more like, this isn't really football. There are so many COVID issues coming up. That was a news point every week. I mean, that really led coverage all the time. It became its own feature, you know. You had to cover it for obvious reasons, but it became so commonplace, and it was obviously much deeper than the injury list was. So now, really, all we're talking about is the guys that can't play and the rules and machinations that go along with that. And covering the Steelers, I know firsthand, there were 3 weeks you didn't know when they were going to play. I mean, it's just kind of like, this is getting old. If they're able to avoid that this season, I think we'll take a good step back toward the idea of, this is football, it's fun, it's entertaining. It's not a constant reminder of the you know, overlying threat to everybody and everything, and seeing it permeate every aspect of our world. It's draining, and I think we can get away from that this season, and maybe get back to something that feels a little bit more normal than it has been.
Yeah, in fact, I was at Micah Shrewsbury's press conference today as he was introduced as the new basketball coach at Penn State, and I got asked by people, you know, off to the side, how many people do you think they're going to let Beaver Stadium this year? Yeah, so I mean, it's on weighing on everyone's minds. I'll tell you, let me give you what we were talking about, that extra playoff game. Maybe I'm thinking this out too much, but I think it says something that they know it because they gave ESPN an extra one. And you and I both know, with all due respect, they don't do a good job with it.
I definitely would agree with that. I don't know what ESPN thinks when they're putting together their broadcast.
But it tells me that even the NFL knows they gave them an extra one because they feel like it's a throwaway.
Yeah, I can get behind that. And we've talked about this before too. Perhaps it's an opportunity to try something else out. I know that the Thursday night game, but the way that they sold it publicly was really about getting every team primetime games. And making them within the division is a pretty fair way to do that, and it accomplishes both goals. One, coaches are much more familiar, so on a short week, this is kind of the team that you would want to play. Two, it's an important game because it's within the division. So those things kind of butt heads a little bit, but it's probably the equalizer to it all. If the 17th game has any strategic advantage, I would honestly say, along the lines of what you just suggested, that we're going to start getting into load management in the NFL.
Yes, I know we are.
There's certainly a team in Western Pennsylvania that could have used a little bit of that during a point last season.
Yep.
I wonder if there's not. Because you look at it, too. I talked about the bottom end being more competitive. At the top, though, it's another week early that you could have clinched. So they might have a two-week scenario in which the games that they're playing aren't as relevant. So you do wonder if that isn't kind of a suggestion that the fleas come with the dog in this case. Adding another game means we're going to have more games that are irrelevant at the end of the year.
Right.
To the degree that matters, I don't know. I don't know how fair it is. I don't know how much you can really do to say, we're going to make sure every game matters in some way. I think that's probably a little overdone, but you can see the possibility in which they're trying to create some buffer room in there to say, you know what, this is going to happen. It's fine. We accept it. We'll figure this out as we go.
But I want to go back to the point you were beginning to make, and that was, you don't quite get what ESPN is doing with what they're doing, because there are times I don't.
It's been a long time since I even touched a TV camera, but just from a production end of it, watching it, it's I don't know who makes the decisions that they make, but they're consistently below their competitors by a noticeable amount.
Yes.
And the ratings are showing that significantly now. It's, you know, the talk always is in general media that Monday Night Football is no longer a destination event. Like, yeah, if you've been paying attention, you can't go 5 minutes without some really weird, bizarre comment from one of the guys in the booth. You should have the pick of whoever you want. Why is it that you don't grab the right ones, i.e., Breeze, Romo?
Right.
Instead, though, you grab Jason Witten, you grab Booger McFarland. These guys were like Hall of Shame worthy booth guys. And I'm not trying. I've done booth work. It's hard. I will say that first and foremost, it is really hard. You need to have experience and or a boatload of natural charisma, which is really where Tony Romo shines.
Yeah.
Probably not the best production guy, certainly not right away, but he's just so likable that whatever he did was fine. Jason Witten was a really, really weak version of that. It fell flat. How are they choosing Jason Witten in that situation? I don't understand what they saw in him that was that great. Whoever it is, and I'm sure it's a group of people making the decisions, they're poor in identifying talent. I'm not sure that that's going to get any better, and that's why they reshuffle the booth every year. From a production end, it just seems kind of odd. The game doesn't – the camera angles that they use are not interesting enough for them to use them as often as they do. It's not a game that you really want to watch anymore. You know, you do because it's there, but you shouldn't be able to kind of nitpick all the things that viewers really do, particularly in social media during games. It's a lot of little things that end up kind of being distracting and don't need to be there. I mean, I understand that there's a level of abuse that those guys just take because they do. It just seems to me like they could have made much better decisions on many of the things that they do. And their broadcast, in my opinion, from a production standpoint as well as a talent standpoint, has gone down noticeably each year. You know, it's not even like a collective thing. They've taken a step back each year they've been trying to do it. And whatever iteration they try to throw out this year just has to start, you know, that much further behind everything else.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think part of this, just to close out the segment, part of this I think goes back to years ago when they had Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick and they had Chris Berman and they had big personalities. And there was a conscious decision made to, hey, look, let's go away from big personalities. Let's try and make things as level as possible across the board. And I think they've been paying a price for that ever since because they don't have really a big personality. That, you know, they have some really solid people, but not a big personality. I'll give you one quick example. The PGA Golf Championship is being played, and ESPN's carrying it. And Michael Eaves is rock solid, does a good job, and Scott Van Pelt is rock solid and does a really good job. And then all of a sudden in the 4 o'clock hour, let's turn it over now to Jim Nance. And all of a sudden, the whole thing sounded different. At least to me, yeah, I was like, whoa, that's a little different.
I would agree. I mean, you're exactly right in that sense. That the studio show, that's the money driver, right? The broadcast rights that ESPN bids for and pays whatever it was, billions of dollars for, the idea to make that back is in your studio shows. They do a good job with those. I really like Randy Moss. I really like Charles Woodson. I think those guys do a much better job than kind of the clown show that other networks carry in their pregame stuff.
I agree.
It's more for me. And they don't all have to be the same. Some people are maybe a little bit more lighthearted. That's more what they want. I think ESPN balances it well, and they have the best analysis and insight that's out there. And then you go to the studio or go to the booth. It's like, okay, you know, it shouldn't be that way. They're ESPN. They're already spending this much money. If they are putting all of their budget into the studio show, it's like, okay. And financially, I see how that works. From a viewer's perspective, though, and there's no way they haven't received this feedback, from a viewer's perspective, it's a turnoff. It's like you need to have, you know, it's really hard. I hate to judge people that do this for a living because I understand it is a really, really hard mark to hit all the time. But I mean, when your competition...
You've judged me repeatedly. I just want to point that out.
It's a tough job. I had to give a presentation yesterday where I talked for like 3 hours straight. I don't know how you guys do that. I like needed a nap. It's tough to sit and talk for that long consecutively and stay on point. But it's more the amount that they do to analyze things that don't matter, the jokes that they try to put in because you can tell they're being told to try to be funny and they can't do it, whether it's they're intimidated by the microphone, whether their sense of humor just won't work for a Disney PG rated audience, right. Whatever it is, it just doesn't translate. And every time that they miss, it thuds. It's really, really loud. And then all the talk is that now you've gotten away from the product on the field. It spirals out of control to the point where if we're not complaining about the officiating, we're ripping the announcers. Those are two places the NFL absolutely does not want to be right. with what used to be their marquee slot. Right. And it just doesn't seem ESPN can get out of its own way and find the right people to do this.
Well, I'm going to get out of your way. Appreciate the time very much. And, you know, I have Jack Hamm and Dick Girardi. That bails me out for the 3 hours. All right. So, thanks, Neil.
Thanks for having me, guys.